Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Mary Ann Dugan, and I represent the plaintiff's appellants in this case. I will try to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, and I will watch the clock. I made myself a big sticky note. As you know, I'm sure this case has been before this Court before in the case of Environmental Protection Information Center, and it involves two statutes, the National Forest Management Act and the National Environmental Policy Act. The NIFMA claims, generally speaking, are about monitoring duties for wildlife, and the NEPA claims fall into two categories. One, that a full environmental impact statement was required because of the significance or potential significance of the impacts, and secondly, that even if a full EIS is not required, the NEPA analysis that was done, the environmental assessment, was not adequate. Unless the Court has a specific issue it wishes me to address, I would start with the argument that the government did not comply with this Court's ruling in the first round, the EPIC case, regarding the Pacific fisher. And as this Court knows, I'm sure, the Pacific fisher is a species that the defendant Forest Service recognizes as sensitive, which means it's trending towards listing on the endangered species list. And in fact, the Fish and Wildlife Service found that the Pacific fisher is warranted for listing under the Endangered Species Act, but was precluded by other priorities.
Okay, so let's talk about this little guy. Yeah. I do have some questions. As you know, you all have been in this record for a long time.
Yes, and it's huge.
It's huge. So I want to make sure I understand a couple of things.
Yes.
I understand that with respect to habitat capability, you think that the Forest Service has a misstatement in its materials. My question is, what is the level of habitat capability you need for maintenance? Is it medium level?
Your Honor, that's a very good question, and one problem is that the Forest Service did not follow this Court's order in the first East Fork case that it should analyze the acreage needed by Pacific fisher, how much suitable fisher habitat would remain after logging, and what would, therefore, the project's effects be on the fisher. And the habitat capability model, this is something defendant itself created to comply with its viability, species viability duties under NIFMA. What they decided, and I want to correct a page site in my brief, it's ER 713 is the habitat capability model. The Forest Service itself states that high-quality habitat must be greater than 70% canopy. What happens here is that the Forest Service acknowledges that this project will reduce all of the habitat that's being logged, which is almost 1,000 acres, to below that canopy closure. And the reason the canopy closure is so critical is because the Fish and Wildlife Service, in its finding, the warranted but precluded finding, said that canopy closure is the number one direct threat to fisher viability. The other important factor is the riparian corridor that they need that's not logged. And they.
Okay. Before we go
yes.
to the riparian corridor, we go back to the canopy. Do they need the medium, in other words, for maintenance and monitoring, do they need the 50% moderate habitat capability? Is that sufficient? Or do you need this higher level? And where does it say you need the higher level in order to maintain?
Well, I don't believe the Fish and Wildlife Service made a specific finding about levels of canopy closure. What they said was, canopy closure reduction by itself is the number one direct threat. Then we go to the Forest Service, which says, here's how we'll define high quality, here's how we'll define moderate quality. Your Honor, I believe that the reasonable inference is that the high quality more greatly ensures the viability of the fishery, whereas the moderate is just kind of moderate. The problem with the Forest Service's analysis is that they incorrectly state in their addendum, the new fishery addendum at 315 to 316, that they don't expect that any significant scale or intensity changes in fisher behavior will occur due to the changes in canopy closure. That's just a conclusory statement. They don't make any explanation of why, except that they say, well, there'll still be some big trees around. There's nothing that says that what fisher need is big trees. What they need is canopy closure. And so for the Forest Service to say there's no impact here, there's not going to be any negative impact to fisher, is simply there's nothing to support that. And that, and because they haven't gone out and surveyed for fisher, they've refused to do that. You can see at ER 309, the fisher addendum, which is from 2008, admits that there has been no monitoring of fisher in the sale units at all. And the most recent data they cite is from 2004 from units outside of this, from areas outside of these sale units. And even that data showed a decrease in fisher over time. And yet they have refused to go survey for fisher or to do any other work that would correlate their ideas about habitat to the logging. But all you have to do is look at their own habitat capability model to see that there must be an impact from reducing acres from high quality to moderate quality. By definition, that's an impact. It's a reduction in the quality.
My question is, even if there's a reduction, do they have to maintain the highest closure?
Your Honor, this is not a case where we're saying that the Forest Service is pushing the fisher, affirmatively, clearly pushing them into the brink. They're already at the brink, okay? They already are warranted for listing under the Endangered Species Act. So this is not a substantive claim that, okay, now you've done it, they're going to go extinct tomorrow. That is not our claim. This isn't an Endangered Species Act case. This is a case about information and disclosure to the public. And they have lied to the public and told the public, this project will not harm the fisher. And they have not disclosed to the public that their own habitat capability model shows that there's going to be a reduction in quality of fisher habitat from this logging project.
Okay, so then let me ask you about the riparian corridor. There's several questions about that. Does it directly relate to the managing to the habitat capability? Is it like a subset of that?
Yes. If you look at ER 713, the habitat capability model talks about the canopy closure, and then it talks about the how wide of a riparian corridor does the fisher need, and they need a 300-foot wide covered travel corridor. This project is maintaining 50-foot buffers on streams, which is a 100-foot corridor. Nowhere is that acknowledged in the environmental assessment that this is going to reduce the quality of habitat by their own, under their own model. Now, where this gets into surveys and monitoring is that they're also not using the habitat capability model correctly. ER 793 says that managers should assess the health, and this is the Forest Service speaking, should assess the health of the individuals and then apply the model accordingly. So first, they're supposed to use the model to determine the level of habitat suitability, which is what they've done, though they haven't disclosed that to the public. And two, assess the health of the population or nest site for that species. So they're supposed to then go validate their modeling, at least periodically, as we explained. Management plan requires annual, if not site-specific, project-specific surveys to validate the models and to tell us what is the trend of this species. They haven't done any surveys for this project. They haven't done annual surveys. They haven't even done, five-year surveys for this area. They've decided to not do any more surveys, and they admit that. This is, even though the Forest Service found specifically that it's feasible to monitor for these species that they chose as management indicator species, ER-794, they decided, and this is a quote, to analyze project-level effects, quote, by forest-scale habitat monitoring and analysis alone. That's ER-336.
Let me ask you what would be the practical effect of a remand with respect to the point where you use rather strong language. You say that they've lied. If they recast their statements to include the information that you've indicated, mm-hmm. would that solve the problem?
It would certainly solve the disclosure problem, yes. I don't believe that would solve the bigger problem, which is the failure to do surveys at any point to validate these models. And even the Lands Council versus McNair case, which the defendants have cited, did not say that they can just simply start using habitat, a summary of what habitat is out there, what kind of habitat. They have to at some point validate the models. The models have to be have good data.
On the riparian corridor, you're saying that they didn't actually do an assessment because they don't have any. I know we don't have to have underground data. We've already said that.
Right.
So they need something to validate the model as to the riparian corridor, or they need to make changes so they have a 300-foot corridor. Which is it?
Well, I think, so the problem here is they made this habitat capability model several years ago. And frankly, if they followed that model, at least then we would know that their own assumptions are being followed, which is we think that, 70% canopy closure or more is high quality. And at some point, yes, those models do need to be validated. But they haven't even done that here. They haven't even followed their own habitat capability model.
What would we be remanding for? What would be, if you got what you wanted on these points, what would that be?
Well, so in the first case, in the first go-around, this court said remanded because the defendant had not analyzed the acreage needed by Pacific Fisher for viability, had not analyzed how much suitable habitat would remain after logging. And that second point most blatantly has not been met here. There's no analysis of how much suitable fisher habitat, either high, medium, or low, is going to be left. We do know that all the acres logged in this project will be reduced from high to at least moderate and maybe to low, but they don't disclose the end result.
They said there's nothing below 50%. Doesn't that satisfy that point?
50%, if I'm not mistaken, is
moderate.
The bottom of the moderate scale. Yeah. So, I might have to go look at that, but I believe that 50% goes into the low scale.
Why don't you check that?
Judge
Lee has a question, but you might want to reserve the rest of your
yes.
time after you answer his
question. Okay, yes,
well,
I would.
It wasn't a question, but at the record ER-315, I think they say the canopy closure will be reduced from 60 to 90 to an estimated 60 to 70%.
There are 41 acres out of the 900 that are in spotted owl habitat. Those will stay from 60 to 70%. The remainder, the 860 or whatever, will be 50 to 60%. That's ER-34, paragraph 21, the answer admitting part of our complaint.
And do you contend that any change in the what was described as the current habitat capability levels would be a violation and require some sort of relief here?
The Forest Service is allowed to log fisher habitat. they are certainly also allowed to harm fisher habitat. What they aren't allowed to do is to do those things without full disclosure and without themselves fully understanding what the impacts are going to be to viability. Now, they do acknowledge, but not in the EA, that this canopy closure will last for 10 to 20 years. They admitted that in their answer to our complaint in paragraph 70. I see I'm out of time, and I will...
Let me... Yes. Follow up with one more question. The assessment that ER 110 states fisher habitat within the project unit will be modified, but current habitat capability levels will not change. That's what they say, will not change. And yet,
that's a lie.
They apparently are changing. In at least two areas, the canopy level and the riparian corridor, and they're saying, well, that's okay because it won't affect or undermine the ultimate habitat of the fisher. Can they do that?
Well, they can't. They're not telling the truth when they do that. And what they have to do under NIFMA, so under NEPA, they must disclose the true impacts. And so they haven't complied with NEPA because they haven't explained what happens under their own habitat capability model. Under NIFMA, they can't do that because they have to have a cogent explanation about why they can get away with not doing surveys in this area when under their own model, there's going to be an admitted reduction in quality of fisher habitat. So they haven't gone out and surveyed for fishers so they can say, all right, here's a fisher den, a nest, and this is going to be logged, and here's the impact. Instead, they're using models, and then they're not even using the model. So they're just thoroughly violating NIFMA in this case. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Todd Pickles. I represent Appalee, U.S. Department of Agriculture Forest Service. Judge McKeown, I'd like to begin by answering the question you asked about to what level must the forest be managed under the habitat capability model. It's a moderate level. That's within the forest plan. That is what is being managed in this case with respect to Pacific fisher. So we are meeting the requirements of the forest plan. With respect to the riparian reserves issue, the forest plan talks about travel corridors, not riparian reserves. With respect to the limited logging that will happen in riparian reserves in the Pacific fisher habitat, that only is going to occur with respect to ephemeral or seasonal streams. The perennial streams will have no logging. And the ultimate conclusion, and I think this is the most important point that is emphasized in Lands Council 2, is that the fact that there is some disturbance to habitat does not preclude the application of a habitat analysis model. That's exactly the argument that the court rejected in Lands Council 2, McNair versus Lands Council, which we've referred to as Lands Council 2. The other issue that this court addressed in the en banc decision in Lands Council 2 was the argument that's again been raised here about the lack of on-the-ground studies within the analysis area. This court reversed prior decisional law in the circuit, which had indicated that such on-the-ground analysis was required. Lands Council 2, and I think this is an important part because plaintiffs refer in their briefs that Lands Council 2 hasn't changed the case law, it merely affirmed prior case law. That's absolutely not correct. Lands Council 2 is an en banc decision, and the reason it was en banc is because the court found it necessary to clarify prior decisional case law. And one of those cases, as this court is aware, had required in Ecology Center versus Austin an on-the-ground analysis. That is not the case. The fact that there is no, quote, on-the-ground surveys does not make the habitat analysis infirm.
As you can see, we've focused on these statements. And Council for Conservation Congress says that it's a lie to say it will not harm the fisher when there would be a reduction. Would you respond to that specific point?
Yes, Your Honor, and I think it actually raises two issues. The first is that there is no reduction. There will be not 1 acre of suitable fisher habitat reduced. That is the determination the Forest Service made. They did it based on studies. This is not anecdotal evidence. These are scientific, academic studies that were cited in the Pacific Fisher Addendum. They applied the habitat capability model, and the determination was made that the suitability of the Pacific fisher's habitat will not be reduced. And that is the determination that's made within the Forest Service's expertise. That is precisely the kind of...
Is that because there will be at a minimum the moderate level, which is talked about in the habitat capability model?
That is part of it, Your Honor. Certainly we're managing, we have to comply with the terms of the forest plan, and the forest plan indicates, and I believe this is at the supplemental excerpts of record 280, that the plans must be managed to a moderate capability level.
I think there may be some, that's where one disagreement is, it seems to me, because I think Conservation Congress is saying, no, if you reduce the habitat capability, and it was 70 in some places, and then you reduce it down, that you've reduced habitat capability. And your response to that is that, but not below what's required by what your plans say?
Two things, Your Honor. The plan itself does not indicates that a moderate capability is sufficient, and that's what's happened here. I think...
Is that in the forest plan?
Correct, Your Honor. It's in the habitat capability. Well, it's in the forest plan, and that's, again, cited in our excerpts of record 280.
Well, I'm not understanding because the first you say in the EA that you're not going to modify the habitat below the habitat capability levels as displayed in Table 13. I'm looking at EA 110. And then some of that habitat is over 70. I believe, and you've now modified that, have you not, to reduce it down to moderate from high capability?
Correct, Your Honor.
It seems to me at one place you say in the EA we're not going to change it. It will not be below its current habitat capability. Now in your response and in your brief you say, well, a few acres have been reclassified from high to moderate, but that doesn't undermine our conclusion with respect to the fisher habitat in general. I mean, I'm paraphrasing. And it seems like there's an inconsistency there. Would you help us?
And I apologize if I'm not articulating well. That there's two pieces of the, or at least two pieces of the analysis that the Forest Service used to determine the effects on habitat, the suitability of the Pacific fisher's habitat. And that was the question this court previously remanded that we address, and that's what this court and Lands Council 2 and all of its other decisional case laws is emphasized. One of the pieces was to apply the habitat capability model, and that model has to be managed to a moderate level. And the determination was made that approximately 20 to 26 acres of high capability habitat may be, we don't know for certain, because if there's overlap, for example, with if it happens to fall within the riparian reserves that are along in a perennial stream, there may not be logging. If it's sloped, is unstable, it may not be logged. But potentially, 20 to 26 acres may be reduced from high to moderate. That fits well within the determination of moderate management under the habitat capability model. But that model is only one piece of the analysis. The analysis, again, ultimately is focused on whether or not the suitability of the habitat will be retained. The other pieces of the analysis were based on the studies that were employed by the professional biologist retained or as part of the Forest Service. And also, after this court reversed and there was an injunction with respect to the project was halted about halfway through. The Forest Service was able to go back and look at what happened in the areas that had been thinned under the project before it was halted. And a determination was made that the habitat in those areas the suitability hadn't been reduced. So in a way, we have benefit of the fact that the court halted it midway and we were able to validate the assumptions that were made initially. And this is all set forth in the Pacific Fisher Addendum as well as the EA. I do want to make clear that we have addressed the issue that was raised, or that this court raised in the first go-around, the East Fork 1 case. We have determined, again, that no suitable fisher habitat will be reduced. And therefore, based on that determination, there will be no loss of viability. That's the opinion of the Forest Service. That is the type of opinion that this court has granted deference to from Inland Empire through Lands Council 2 and most recently in the Ecology Center versus Castaneda case.
Let me, if you would explain again about the riparian reserves versus the travel corridors.
Correct, Your Honor. There's the requirement that the travel corridors have limited logging and within a, I believe, 300-foot span. And part of the findings that are in the Pacific Fisher Addendum indicate that one of the travel corridors is along waterways. The there are prescriptions under the plan that will limit or actually preclude thinning in areas associated with perennial streams, you know, constantly flowing streams. I think there are only approximately 74 acres of riparian reserves that would be even within the habitat at all, and it's unclear to what extent those would have thinning. Again, if they're ephemeral streams, there may be, and that would be limited to 50 feet. If the perennial, there wouldn't. But I think, stepping back, the most important part of that analysis focuses again on, is there going to be an appreciable effect on the suitability of the habitat? And the fact that there is some change to habitat does not preclude the habitat analysis. That's what was one of the most important points of the Lands Council 2 decision. And that's the determination that's been made again by the professional biologists in this case, based on studies, based on the post East Fork 1 data.
Her position there was you need 300 wide. Here you only have 100 in some places. And in any event, we didn't use the protocol that's in the suitability model. I think that's what I heard. So if you would respond to that.
Yes, Your Honor. I think in our papers we've attempted to address the argument that somehow we haven't applied the habitat capability model correctly. We've explained that we looked at, for example, the presence of oak as a hardwood tree, and that's within the capability model. I think we've attempted to address this issue of the travel corridor being managed at 300, and that to the extent there is, in limited circumstances, a riparian reserve that would fall within that definition. If it's ephemeral or a seasonal stream, it's going to be limited to the 100-foot corridor. And that, even within that determination, again, the habitat, and I guess maybe I should step back, the habitat capability model is a tool that the Forest Service applies in order to determine whether or not the habitat analysis, there's going to be some effect on diversities, which is what the NFMA mandates. And in this case, applying the tool along with the other elements to the analysis, the post-East Fork 1 review and the scientific literature and studies that were cited, the determination was made that there will be no effect on the habitat.
Well, let me just understand what you're saying. I'm looking at the habitat capability model, ER713, and it's got the moderate required level is 300 to 600 feet, ER713. Then it appears that at least you say only 74 acres of the riparian reserves might be subject to logging as close to as 50 feet instead of the 300 to 600 feet. So that'd be 100 feet total, 50 feet on each side. That's a change, is it not? You argue in your answering brief, well, the habitat won't be degraded. And my question is, why not?
I think, Your Honor, now I understand. We don't read this prescription to mean there could be no treatments within. We don't read this to mean that nothing can ever be done within 300-foot travel corridor. What this means is that the habitat must be maintained within that corridor. And I don't know, and I don't think there's been anything cited in the record that indicates that somehow within this corridor nothing can ever be done. And therefore, the determination has been made that even with the limited logging that's going to occur, and this is limited logging, that it may be occurring within a travel corridor, the ultimate result is that the suitability of that habitat will not be affected. That's the command of this court in East Fork 1. That's what this court from Inland Empire to the present has required.
Come to that conclusion, and the basis, okay, so let's go back. It seems to be that there's 74 acres that seem to be in play under this question. So on those 74 acres, you're saying that, well, you, if there's waterway, you have an obligation to protect habitat within 300 feet of the waterway. Is that right?
Well, you have an obligation to manage, you know, within this moderate, it's required to manage at the moderate level, the canopy within that travel corridor.
In that travel corridor.
Correct. And we're not going to be changing that, Your Honor.
Okay. So it's not, that's just defining the shape of the table for what you have to maintain habitat in.
Correct, Your Honor. And that's why we're not in contravention of our own rules. We're maintaining that within we're actually maintaining this within the habitat itself. Is that
then, because I think this is where at least I'm confused. The 100 or 50 and 50, where does that come in?
That's within the project parameters say. Within that, there will be no logging at all.
So then you're saying if there's no logging at all within that, in the remaining portion, we're also not doing anything that would degrade habitat. Is that
Your Honor,
correct?
My time's expired. May I respond to your question? That's correct, Your Honor. And that's, I guess, the point I've been trying to stress is within this travel corridor, we're still managing to all of the requirements with respect to canopy closure. And we're actually doing that beyond just the travel corridor. But within this 100-foot corridor, there's not going to be any thinning or you know, prescription. And therefore, we're consistent. And that's why, I guess, the determination has been made with all of these pieces that there'll be no effect on the habitat, the suitability of the Pacific Fisheries habitat. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
I have another correction to the ER site. The habitat capability model seems to be on two different pages. ER 713 has the corridors, but ER 319 has the canopy requirements. And what that page says is that greater than 70%, which is high canopy, high capability, is preferred. That's the word that's used. Your Honor was correct, 40 to 69% is still within the moderate range, and that is required, is the quote. And so...
You're not suggesting that they need to meet the preferred, are you?
No, Your Honor. We're saying they need to have scientifically accurate statements. Now, what they've done is in the addendum, which was done in 2008 in response to this court's ruling, they have basically taken the habitat capability model and fudged it and said, well, you know, even if we, and they don't even say this, but what they've really done is say, if we log below, if we reduce canopy below 70%, as long as we have these other things, snags and a few big trees, we're not going to have any impact to fisher habitat, which simply flies in the face of their own habitat capability model.
Your time has expired. If you have
it's going back up. I'm sorry. Thank you, Your Honors.
You took a lot of your time with her questions, so
yes.
You had one final point to make. You're certainly welcome.
Well, yes, I would urge you to look at the NEPA issues because they are significant as well, and I know you will look at that. And I also want to remind the Court that I believe this was put on an expedited schedule because we believe logging will be resuming pretty quickly with the weather changing. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Thank both of you and also for your briefing in this matter. The case of Conservation Congress versus Forest Service is submitted, and the Court is adjourned for the morning.
Oh, no, I've done that before.
Oh, okay.
I put myself in.